It is 8:13 on this Veterans Day, and I am very, very pleased to welcome into the studio this morning Mr. Dean Benzer. Sir, thank you very much for coming in today. I certainly appreciate it. You've got a great story we're going to talk about here.
Okay, thank you very much. It's my pleasure.
Now, you joined the let's start with you tried to enlist mm-hmm. in World War II, mm-hmm. and they didn't take you the first time.
Mm-hmm. No, I had a perforated eardrum.
Okay.
Hole in it.
Okay.
And they said, you can't be too much trouble for the military to have you. So they rejected me, and I went home for 9 months, and they called me again. And that time they accepted me.
All right. And that would have been, you said that was what, 1943?
43.
And you were how old?
23 years old.
23 years old.
Mm-hmm.
And you were assigned to?
I was interviewed at the induction center, and they assigned me to the U.S. Air Force. And because I had been in college in Whitewater State, that was called Teachers College.
Right, at that point, yep.
Yeah. They said, you'd be a good candidate for the aviation cadet program, and we'll put you into it. And that meant I had to go to a university, who happened to be University of Niagara, for 6 months on training on everything from weather, just all about the philosophy of the Air Force and how they operated and one thing or another. And that went fine. And the group, there was 48 of us there, and they shipped us out to California after our 6 months, and things didn't go good for us then. They decided that they had too many pilot trainees in the mix, and we had to take some other avenue in the Air Force, but we were going to stay in the Air Force.
Okay.
So I chose at that time to go to armor school, which deals with the bombs and the guns and the anything connected with the plane and the dropping of the bombs.
Okay.
And it was probably about 9 more months of training at various places, Denver, Colorado, Las Vegas, and down in Louisiana. So it took me a long time to run through all their programs, but we finally made it, and I got assigned to a B-17 Flying Fortress crew in Omaha, and we were all set for training as a crew, which took us about 8 weeks, and then we were off to England with the same plane, a brand new one that we just picked up in Omaha. So that's...
When did you finally end up in England?
We ended up in England early, very early, 45.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
And so once you're there, mm-hmm. you're in the air and you're flying.
You bet. Yep. You don't fly every day. It depends a lot on if you had flak damage on the aircraft. Sometimes it took them a couple of days to repair it. But... we had approximately 40 to 45 airplanes on our base, and you didn't generally fly 2 days in a row. They tried to give you a little rest because you're up at 4 or 5 o'clock in the morning, and you maybe not get back to the base until 5 o'clock at night. And some of the missions were a lot longer than others, but they had so many airplanes marshaling together at one time that it generally took an hour and a half or more to get into your right position before we got over the continent itself.
Okay.
And so we were fortunate. We got hit by flak several times, but nothing serious, nothing that disabled our plane. And the closest one we came to was some flak came through the underside of the aircraft and came up in back of the seat of the pilot.
Ooh.
That wouldn't have been good.
No, no, that would have been
not at all. But we got along fine, and we were able to make our missions and flew the same plane back to the United States, which is a little unusual.
Huh.
And then we were all set at that time to learn all the intricacies about the B-29, and we were headed for the Pacific at that time.
Oh, okay.
But then, thank heavens, Harry Truman came along.
Things wrapped up there.
Things changed fast.
Yeah. We're having a community conversation on this Veterans Day with Dean Benzer. And so tell us about what you actually did on the plane. What was your role on the plane?
Okay, my role as armorer deals with the bomb load and the guns. We had 13 50 caliber machine guns on each plane. And if any of them malfunctioned or something happened to one of them, we had to fix it. And that was my job to do. And also, I had the bombs that I had to work with. As when they were loaded on the airplane, they were not fused. They had a wire that went through the nose of each bomb, and they weren't activated until I went back in the middle of our flight and took the wires off of those bombs. Then they were activated and live, and they were ready to go. And I flew in the nose of the aircraft with the navigator, and it was my job. I had two 50s underneath me that were remotely controlled with a kind of like a handgun. And then my most important job was watching for my lead plane, and he would drop a smoke bomb approximately 10 seconds before he wanted the bombs dropped. And when I saw the smoke bomb, I got ready and watched very closely. And when I saw his first bomb come out, mine went. And they all went out in nice order. They were fairly accurate most of the time, but the wind played a factor on it. Sometimes the wind would blow them off course a little bit.
Okay.
But when you got 14, 15, 16 aircraft in one group bombing one spot, you can't do too bad.
Right, right. So, yeah. It's close counts.
Close counts. That's right.
Yeah. Yeah. Now, what kind of, you said most of the runs you made were into Nazi Germany, right?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
And, and what kind of targets?
One of our favorite targets was the Kiel Canal, where the German submarines were based, and they would bring their submarines back in there for maintenance and fixing them up. And they were causing a lot of trouble, the submarines. We ran into those submarines as early as Iceland when we were heading over to England in the first place. And they were sitting around in the water waiting for some aircraft to come in a little low, and then they were going to take a couple shots at them with their howitzer. And we went there. We went to several airfields, railroad marshaling yards we went to, and anything that had military value that the Germans needed, we tried to knock out.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
You got out in February of 46.
February 46.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yep.
Had you already been back to the States by then, or?
Yeah. We came back to the States in late 45. Not too late, though. I think it was September.
Okay.
When we came back to the States, and we were down to Florida for training on the B-29, which we never had. And and they broke the crew up there and sent me to Indiantown Gap, Pennsylvania, heavens knows why. And I got up there, and my records didn't show up, so, well, it wouldn't discharge me because they couldn't find my records. And anyway, finally, they said, okay, well, we'll keep you around for a while. We'll use you as a counselor for the people that were discharging here. So I did that for a couple of months, and finally I got out.
Okay.
Yep.
And then you said you worked for years for AT&T.
Yeah, 42.
Wow. Mm-hmm. Long time.
Yep. We traveled a lot. I traveled the state of Wisconsin quite a bit in the last 10 years. I was on the road most of the time. Really coordinating long-distance service from all of the independent companies that are in the state with AT&T.
Oh, gotcha. Okay. Mm-hmm. All right. And you said you've been back to Europe a couple times.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And yep. One of them you said was particularly memorable.
Yep. One of them was really memorable because I went with a tour group of 48 people that they were all military people from World War II. And we visited a lot of places that were familiar to these people because a lot of them were paratroopers. They'd dropped into during the D-Day.
And, sure.
They had a lot of stories to tell. It was very interesting. And one of the paratroopers met a family that befriended him when he was there.
Huh.
That 50 years ago.
Wow.
And that was really quite heartwarming. And they were very thankful to the Americans.
I'm thinking, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yep.
Now, you said you were on, you did one of the honor flights recently.
Yes. We went on one of the honor flights to Washington, D.C. There were 141 veterans and 141 guardians or helpers. Every veteran has to have a helper. That's the way the thing is set up. And I had a wonderful, wonderful lady, Dawn Miller, her name was, and is, and she did just a wonderful job for me. And it was very memorable. We visited all of the monuments and tombs, and we saw the guard change at Arlington National Park.
Okay.
And that was very impressive to be there and see how they do that. And those guys are walking every day, and everything is precise. 16 seconds between turns from one end of the walk to the other.
Is this by the Tomb of the Unknowns?
Yeah, by the Tomb of the Unknown.
Okay.
Yeah, very impressive.
Okay.
And the guard change when they changed people on duty was very impressive and so precise. It's really wonderful. Yeah.
And you said you saw all the moments. Which was your favorite memorial?
By far, the World War II memorial. It's the biggest and most impressive. It has water displays and lights, and every state is recognized with its own kind of, a memorial to the United States as well as it is to the veterans. But I think that was by far the most exciting to me.
Well, we're having a community conversation with Dean Benzer on this Veterans Day. Sir, again, thank you so much. It's just been wonderful. I'm just great stories. And but I tell you what do you think for people who are out there now who may have kids or grandkids who are thinking of joining service? What do you think? Is that a good idea?
I think it would be. I think it would be. Uh-huh. We have a lot of grandkids and second generation kids. The 447th Bomb Group, which I was with, have great organization still running. And we meet once a year, and every 2 or 3 years we go back to England. And now because the veterans like myself are starting to be less and less of us because of our age, we have taken in all of the younger generation, and we have a lot of new members in the 440th that never saw any war, but they're happy to join this organization to perpetuate the purpose of it.
Okay.
So that's great.
Ah, all right. Mm-hmm. And you're also involved with the American Legion?
Yes. Mm-hmm. Very, very, very involved with the American Legion. Yep. Mm-hmm. And have a lot of good friends there.
Mm-hmm. And what else would you like to share? We said we'd get you out of here about 8:30 or so, because I know you've got an event at 9. So
we have an event at 9 at the Lighthouse. I believe the Veterans of Foreign Wars are going to put that on. And sure, I can't think of anything. I think the only thing I would say, I think the military changes you. It brings out the best in you. And I don't regret it. I don't regret for a minute being in service.
Well, thank you again so much for your service. And it's been just a pleasure talking to you, sir. Stop by anytime.
Thank you. My pleasure of being here. And thank you for inviting me.
All right. Well, thank you very much again, Mr. Dean Benzer. Oh, what rank did you retire? I didn't find that out.
Sergeant.
A sergeant. Okay. Yep. All right. Well, I'll tell you what. We're gonna get to some music here, and